Earth people's mad experiments with atomic power would one day blow up the whole Earth into pieces and then hurt the lives of several million creatures on other planets, they said, and that was why they were here. They were here to protect their relatives on other planets as well as to prevent the people here to destroy themselves. Furthermore, Henry was told that the seven stations on the ocean floor were placed in strategic areas. The largest of them is located in South Pole ice masses, well sheltered from view by intrusive submarines from Earth's superpowers. The other is located between New Zealand and Australia. The third is outside the Korean coast. The fourth is located on Easter Island. The fifth is located outside the Thule, Greenland. The sixth is located off Mount Shasta in Northern California. The seventh is located west of the Canary Islands. It was the last mentioned that Henry visited. All this he learned while he was down in the underwater city. He estimated that they were down there in an hour before he was taken back. It took a couple of weeks before they came back in the same inexplicable way, that pillar of light that slowly became people. This time they asked if he wanted to follow them home to their home planet. He asked if their homes were in heaven and was very surprised at the response. He learned that their home planet was in a galaxy 85 million light years from our own Milky Way. They indicated the direction in the sky about 25 degrees above the horizon in the southwest of the Canary Islands. He never got the name of their galaxy, but it was of minor importance because they probably have completely different titles of galaxies than we have, and also it may be one that we did not know or cannot see from here. Henry adopted the commandment to follow them home. This time it was a large craft that was on the water and waited. It looked like a Zeppelin, without the gondola, and when they were to go on board they took him in hand. Any doorway did he never discover. So, then came the next big surprise. Henry feels a slight shudder in the hull and a sound that resembled an electric generator. About 10 seconds later, the ship is landing, million light years from Earth. Henry was dumbfounded while he understood that the surprise was in obsolete condition at this location. In front of his feet lay a city that he had never seen before and which no earthly science fiction writer could describe, in his opinion. His friends took him on a tour into the city. Instead of going on the ground, they hovered low between the streets and houses. The material in the streets and the walls seemed to live. He saw an iridescent sheen all over. He felt weightless. After a few hours' stay they went back to Earth with the same breakneck speed as before. Back on dry land came the great ship off, and left on the beach was the little known Adamski-type ship. They brought into Henry the house again without opening the door. Inside, they took farewell. They were dissolved to nothing again, and Henry went to his bed. But there was already a Henry in bed. So this indicate that this trip was made in a raised level, or in the 4D/etheric astral level, as many of the UFO trips for earthly travelers are done. But not in the case of Auntie Johnson's trip, I think. Roram. Everything went black around him and he woke up many hours later. Henry was perplexed at what had happened to him during this time, but all the old pain was gone from his body, and he saw it as a sign that this was really something he had experienced and not been dreaming. Alv and I are now discussing what his friend have experienced. Alv associate with other stories of something similar strange contents, career in the case of underwater cities, I do not doubt that either. There are reports from warships off Korea where US naval units patrolling the coast. One of these reports come from a ship which was about 70 miles off the Korean coast when something unexpectedly turned on their radar. Persons on deck observed at the same time that an unknown object came rushing from space at a tremendous pace. They could see the torpedo-like body before it in a steady pace dived into the sea. This happened just 150 yards from the ship's side. Hydrophones were used, but no sound could be perceived from the depths, that was 1,200 meters. They wondered what it was, and while they were standing there talking to each other, the object came up again with the same incredible speed and disappears into space. They classified the object as a UFO and reported it to their base on the coast. They knew nothing about what the others saw out there. South Pole. The matter was soon forgotten, but a small item came in a local newspaper, from which I received this report, and also what I remember of Henry S. talking to me on the base off the coast of Korea. I do not have this text, but I have another article in my hand. I will read it for you. It is a classified case that has come out to public attention. Over the past 20 years, the world's marine units conducted a powerless struggle to chase a type of submarine in appearance similar to our submarines, but has the peculiar capacity to lift from the water and silently fly straight out into space at a tremendous speed. U.S. Navy calls them phantom submarines and are most baffled by their ability to escape the shallow water and through impossible spaces. The phantom submarines have also demonstrated another fantastic power. On January 27, 1962, was an icebreaker from the U.S. Navy in the waters at Admiralty Bay, Antarctica. This icebreaker was part of a large raft cadre which conducted an extensive research program called Operation Deep Freezing. On board were the Brazilian scientist and observer Dr. Rubens J. Villa. They were assembled on deck and looked out over the vast icy expanses with binoculars when something amazing happened. First we heard a roaring and crashing sound of the ice. Then something shot up from the sea by not less than 7 meters thick ice. It was a 10-meter-long submarine-like craft with shiny silver hull. It rose into the sky and disappeared in a dizzying speed. Huge blocks of ice were thrown far away and out of the hole spouted 30 meters high water cascades. The U.S. Navy has never officially confirmed the great event, but by Dr. Villa, who considered it quite wrong to classify, it leaked to the Brazilian media. Greenland. Let me tell of another UFO sighting. A retired naval officer from Silver Springs in Maryland saw a phantom submarine out in the North Atlantic during World War II. We were near Greenland on an anti-submarine exercise when it appeared. It was the largest and most remarkable submarine I've ever seen. It lay on the surface on the water. The commander thought that the submarine belonged to Nazi Germany and we reopened fire at them. The submarine had a cone glass-like body, and although it was hit by several volleys from the destroyer, it remained undamaged, as we saw when the smoke cleared completely. The submarine started when we went on firing, continuing naval officer. And it disappeared faster than a conventional submarine. Just a few minutes it was a small dot on the horizon. This event was the most amazing in my entire career in the Navy. So says the retired naval officer, and he was far from alone in having experienced similar things. They have happened through many years and is happening today. Australia. In 1965 appeared a number of foreign submarine between Australia and New Zealand. Australian Navy chased them for 4 weeks without any result. In January of that year reported a pilot of a passenger aircraft that he had seen a long, metallic, cigar-shaped object, similar to a submarine in the waters off New Zealand. He circled around the subject and noted that there was no superstructure of the conventional kind, but a glass-like cone-shaped dome. Naval research expertise in New Zealand dismissed it as nonsense, and became like many other similar incidents forgotten. To return to Henry's story about the journey to the distant galaxy, which seemed to take 10 seconds. I can tell you that the flying saucer uses 4 different driving methods of their ships. The first of these is a primary, no drift, whether the fuel is water. This method is sometimes used for travel within a planet's atmosphere and is completely harmless to the planet's population. To my, Wenigren's, knowledge, we never get hold of any sure description of how they use water to drive. Rolf Tellano, who has written a number on extraterrestrial travel technology and fuel, have not been mentioned anything about this. As far as I understand, the water is used as a medium of the setting it in rotation in tubes in the peripheries of the ship. It creates anti-gravitation waves when the rotation reaches the necessary speed. More on the EARGA contact. R.O.REM. The second drive method is used more generally. It is the electromagnetic activity in a planet's magnetic field where the sources usually follows the Earth's magnetic lines, known as LHR lines. Although this operation is safe for the inhabitants of the visited planets. The third variety is primary power to pull out immediately from the fixed stars by their magnetic field, and this way is extremely fast. With this primary operation, they can achieve more light speeds and it can be used in solar systems. That they manage not to clash with asteroid and another scratch in space, because they can transform their ship's magnetic flux so that the ship repels objects that happen to lie in their path. Our own technology has not reached the point where we can do similar maneuvers with our satellites and spaceships. The fourth and fastest method is mental operation. In this case, drives the ship forward in the light energy. This method converted ship materials to the mental matter, which totally insensitive to what we call the G-forces. Here we must remember that these astronauts or UFOnauts in their natural level, do not have any heavy physical bodies like us. They are so far ahead us in their development, as they millions of years ago has left the physical behind, and use only their mental bodies, which of course is completely weightless. Their matter weigh nothing, even though they are of mental matter. This is a matter, which is still alien to Earth scientists. Only occult interest people know about these non-physical levels of matter. When UFO pilots are going to do a long trip in space, demarcating the one small part of the volume that they stay in the tank, they create what is needed for the trip. Such ships cannot even be seen on our normal senses, media. However, if they are densified to the astral, they can be seen of a medium and also then the people who travel with it. When Henry went with them to their planet in the distant galaxy, they pulled out his astral and mental body from the physical and astral body. Henry could not feel the difference of feelings in the physical body and the mental. When he told us about his journey for me, Wenigren, he said that he had traveled with the physical body because he was not aware that the various bodies and cells can be separated in this way. Similar happens when you are exposed to general anesthesia. The above finer cells are hunted out from the physical body and hovers outside the operating table. There are lots of such stories about people who have seen what the doctors have done to their bodies during surgery. When Henry had to go into space, it was a mental ship, and not a physical, and therefore he thought that he floated right through the spaceship walls. I suppose that he also was outside the body, then visited the city underwater. When he saw the creatures' figures of light, it was during the time when they transformed their mental bodies to the, for Henry's eyes, visible bodies. In the book On Board the Spacecraft, Adamski knows that his friends do not look the same on their home planet, as they do when they materialize or form on Earth. They also have long since left the physical behind and live in their mental bodies. My opinion is that Earth people's real task is to live a life so well as they can, so that we can leave the physical behind us. But yet we have far to go before it can be done. I would also like to tell you of landings, out of Arcanum archives in February 1967. A member of BSRA, Border Country Researchers, was invited there to study more closely the flying saucers, also known as aeroforms. In a letter to Dr. Mead Lane on 16/4/1954, he describes his experience. I have just returned from Muroc. When we were allowed to enter the cordoned off area, I had a feeling that the world had just come to an end with such a fantastic realism. Because I had never seen so many people in a state of total collapse and confusion as these, when they realized that their world picture of truth had ceased to exist in their old standards. The reality of these aeroforms from another plane of existence is now and forever moved by speculation to the realms of a rather painful part of the consciousness of every responsible scientific and political group. During my two-day visit, I saw five different types of flying saucers, which are studied and examined by people responsible in the Air Force, with help of the ETs and as far as the permissions allow. I have no words to express my feelings. You can build a proper picture of the mental and emotional chaos that hundreds of the authority figures and sages in physics have come into. Sometimes I could not suppress the wave of compassion within myself, when I watched the pathetic confusion of very brilliant brains while they struggled to find any rational explanation that would enable them to maintain their cherished theories and beliefs. To observe the highly intelligent scientists wander around before the allegations and evidence that is totally incompatible with their science is not something edifying. I will never forget these 48 hours at Muroc Air Base in the United States. UFO pilots had let their spaceships disappear and become visible in front of the stunned onlookers. It does not surprise me if these, our authority figures, were near the limit of a nervous breakdown. The whole foundation of their existence had become fragmented. Imagine yourself standing there and see a solid object gradually disappear before your eyes. You could see through it. At a certain stage of dematerialization, the ships were crystal clear, yet three-dimensional and hard. The pilots' mastery of the material was such that they could raise the vibration of the ship's design even more, so that from our point of view, they completely disappeared. The startled observers could then go over the site where the ships had been and did not feel anything other than air and ground on which they stood. Craft materialized again and became solid and metallic. The pilots said they had never left the place with his ships. But, and this is essential for flying saucers and the true space science, a change of vibration frequency means a change of dimension or reality. This materialization and dematerialization happened many times to the earthly observers' sake. The pilots' bodies went through the same process as the ship's material. It is for this reason that they can suddenly stand in a room as bright creatures of a person they wish to visit, as was the case with Henry, the down to the Canary Islands. This last, translated a rune from Book of Swedish Christina Wennergren's book.